it's very hard for me to pick against Tom Brady in this game. And I'm not gonna. I'm going to take the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to beat the Aaron Rodgers-led Green Bay Packers. And Brady's just going to do just enough to win.
Oh, I'm taking taking Tom all the way. You know it.
Of course.
I'm taking Kansas City. I think Pat Mahomes on one leg and one arm could beat the Buffalo Bills.
Welcome to The Fade Route with D and Z. Here are your hosts, D and Z. Welcome everybody to this week's episode of The Fade Route with D and Z. I am Z, and the intros to our show are starting to become a little redundant as once again, 2021 puts us in a position that 2020 left us in, where we have to pay respects, and well-deserved respects, to a sports legend. Henry Aaron, better known as Hank Aaron, better known as Hammer and Hank Aaron, passed away at the age of 86. Looked damn good for his age, too. Hall of Famer. Some will say he is still the home run king at 755. But there's a major asterisk on that, and we'll get to that shortly as well. Put the Milwaukee Braves on the map. Put the Atlanta Braves on the map. Finished his career with the Milwaukee Brewers, and that is where he formed his lifelong friendship with Bud Selig, who would later become the commissioner of the league. And he will leave a major legacy that will go unchallenged throughout the course of time. Henry Aaron was a great player, not just a power hitter. He was an over 300 hitter, so for his career, he definitely was a great all-around player, not just the power hitter that people know because of the 755 career home runs. But another legend gone before our eyes, and rest in peace, Hank. We know that the road wasn't easy, but we hope that it was worth it. And here he is. I've known this guy since our days on Carousel Shoes, flight crew through and through, the last QB in St. John's history. What's up, D? How's it going, man?
Man, talk about a legend. I mean, to me, he is still the home run champ. 755 home runs, especially all the adversity he faced, chasing down Babe Ruth during some difficult times.
Got death threats for history.
And like you said, lifetime 305 hitter, never hit more than 45 home runs in a season. I don't even think the guy had batting gloves. Like, wow. You know, I think, you know, I'm an Atlanta Braves fan, and you know, I hope that Atlanta Braves never change their name, but if they want to change it to the Atlanta Hammers for Hank Aaron, I'm all for it.
I would love that. That's actually a really great tribute. I would be all for that. And you know what? If Bud Selig is listening, and Bud, we hope you are, if you want to run this up the flagpole to that schmuck Rob Manfred, let's make that happen. One of the funny anecdotes...
Hey, you know, when legends become real, print the legend. I mean, that's what Hank Aaron is, man.
100%. 100%. There's a really funny anecdote that I heard about him. One day he was at spring training, I believe in Braves camp, or it might have been Brewers camp. Either way, he was doing a special hitting drill, and he was trying to instruct guys on how to do it, and they just weren't getting it. So he's like, he took the bat, and then he just placed the ball exactly where he wanted to, turned around and said, "Why can't you do it like this?" So, the hand-eye coordination is unreal.
He was a 25-time All-Star.
Right.
25 times. Like, come on, man. This is not a softball league.
No.
This is Major League Baseball.
No, 100%. And
6 feet, 180 pounds, not even a big roided-out guy, average man, just quick bat.
That's it. Hand-eye coordination, quick bat, and really could – He really had that skill, almost like Tony Gwynn, where he could put it exactly where he wanted it just based on hand-eye coordination and vision. It's really a talent, and not many guys have that anymore. And you know what? The Hall of Fame has definitely, immortalized him, and now he will live on forever through Cooperstown. But the 2021 Hall of Fame class will go empty. Curt Schilling was the closest one to getting in. You need 75% of the votes, and he only got about 71, up about 1%, fell 16 votes short of the necessary threshold. And, it is definitely calculated on his part. He said he requested that his name be removed from the ballot if he felt he wasn't going to be getting a fair shake from the BBWAA, and he wanted to go in on the players' accord. So, in a court of law, we'd call that a jury of his peers. But, the top three vote-getters would definitely be number one in the Hall of Assholes. So you got Schilling, Bonds, and Roger Clemens finished in the top three, and the other two didn't even finish that close. So this year in Cooperstown, we're going to do the 2020 redo, and Derek Jeter is going to get a lot of airtime.
Yeah, when it comes down to it, you can't say anything about Curt Schilling, the player. Curt Schilling, the player, was baller. 3.46 ERA, over 3,000 strikeouts, 13-time All-Star, 4-1 in World Series with a 2.06 ERA, 11-2 postseason record. He single-handedly beat the Yankees with Randy Johnson in a 2001 World Series. He helped the Red Sox, I think, win two titles. He was a straight beast. It's just the problem is the things he talks about off the field, it's very standoffish. Makes people feel uncomfortable. And I think it's unfair to judge Curt Schilling, the player, as Curt Schilling, the civilian. And I think that's what's happening here.
I agree with that. Major League Baseball definitely has its own legacy of letting unsavory characters into the Hall of Fame already. Ty Cobb is a known racist. So that's the one example I can think of. And, we are of the same mindset about this. Whether
he's a double dipper too.
He is a double dipper, you dipped your chip, you ate it, and you dipped again. But with that, we're of the same mindset regarding Bonds and Clemens that, let them all in, just dedicate that wing to just the cheaters and the people who defrauded the game and cheated the game. The Black Sox, Pete Rose, the steroid guys. Gaylord Perry's already in. He's admitted that he's doctored the ball. So as far as that goes,
thing is with baseball, most of it's cheating, right?
Yeah.
They call it stealing bases, stealing signs. You do doctor the baseball, you mess with your bat. Cheating is a known part of baseball. My problem I have is these guys cheated, lied about it, and then it later came out that they really did do it. We've talked, off the air about Andy Pettit. Andy Pettit took steroids, but it wasn't it wasn't for him to gain an advantage. It was for him to get better. He was rehabbing and he wanted to get back and help his team. And he didn't lie about it. He came out and admitted it right away. I'm cool with that. You know, I get it. You know,
No,
it's either you let them all in or don't let any of them in. I'm just, you know, I don't want to talk about it anymore. And you know what the worst part is? It's creating a cloud over Cooperstown. You know, because you're getting into a situation where some people don't even want to go because it's like, you know, you're discrediting the people that are there. Like, what are you gonna do? You're gonna have Hank Aaron in the Hall of Fame, and then next to his bus, you're gonna have Barry Bonds.
right.
You're gonna have his bus next to A-Rod. You can't do that, right?
That's
So,
next year. That's a whole nother horse of a different color. You got
right.
A-Rod and David Ortiz coming up.
Right. And the funny part is I was actually talking to a friend of mine about David Ortiz. He's a big Yankees fan and he really doesn't like him. I would not be surprised if David Ortiz becomes a first ballot Hall of Famer. I really wouldn't. I wouldn't. And it's just because of how much he meant to the city of Boston. He was on the team. He was good with the writers. You know, he wasn't like Barry Bonds and he wasn't like Roger Clemens and he wasn't like Curt Schilling. Like, he's a lovable person, and he got them, you know, two World Series, and I think he got them two or three. He was one of the best players on that team. And you know what? There is going to be an uproar. That might be the starting point of when all these dominoes start to fall, is next year when he becomes eligible and could possibly get in.
But to tie it back to what you said about David Ortiz was good with the media, and that's why he's probably got an inside track. Curt Schilling has a combative relationship with the media, which is funny because at one point he was an analyst for ESPN, and the BBWAA in particular have a reputation for being vindictive to people who were mean to them, like Jim Rice. Yeah, Jim Rice was a prick. I get that. Jim Rice was a prick to you. He didn't want to answer your questions. Albert Bell was a prick to you. He didn't want to answer your questions after playing his ass off on the field. Put your big boy pants on. You're going to hold a grudge against a great player, a deserving player, because he was mean to you? Really? Come on. You know, be an adult, put your feelings aside, and objectively review his career.
Right, and I
Jim
think
Rice
this is,
eventually got in.
and
Albert
I think
Bell is done.
this is also different than like the Joe Morgan stance, right? This is more along the lines of, hey, listen, this guy was one of the best players. He should be in there with us. It's not like, you know, with Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, is like, these guys are known cheaters. I don't want them in the Hall of Fame with me, you know. And Joe Morgan was notorious for writing a letter every year telling other people in the Hall of Fame, hey, these guys don't belong in here because he did it the wrong way. Now, like Curt Schilling saying, and I'm starting to think more about this, Curt's going to leave it up to the Veterans Committee. They will vote him in. I don't have a doubt about that. And then you start to wonder if years from now, the Veterans Committee is also going to vote in A-Rod and vote in Barry Bonds and vote in Roger Clemens, right? You would think that
Right.
their peers, because their peers cheated,
Right.
are gonna let them in, especially if you're a guy who cheated and did get in.
Right. And then also look at the writers, right? This is like the old guard, guardians of the game, like we're gonna like keep you out. And you know, as those guys start to fade off into the sunset, retire, pass on, you know, that's life. They're going to get replaced by guys like the bloggers of the world, the podcasters of the world, Dan Lebatards of the world, who see it more as a museum. And you know what? At the end of the day, it is a museum. And while you showcase the good, you also need to showcase the bad. And I think most more guys are going to realize that. And as things progress, and the more bad seeds there are, I think that is going to be looked at more objectively because, you know, everybody is changing and the landscape of the baseball writer is changing. So,
I
you know,
think it's
it's just a
better. I think
product
it's,
of its time.
yeah, it's better to get voted in by your peers anyway. I mean, I think he's right in that sense. Like, I don't care about what you writers think. If the people I played with think I should be in, I'm fine with that.
It's time for the fade-in, where we give a nod to the trending sports stories of the week. Well, one guy who is praised by his peers and the media and writers alike, well, two guys, really, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, went at it in the NFC Championship game. And Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers came out on top, 31-26. Brady didn't have a great game by statistical, you know, analysis. 20-36 for 280, three touchdowns, three picks. Not that great. Meanwhile, Rodgers, 33-48 for 346 with three touchdowns and only one pick. Rodgers was sacked five times as opposed to Brady, who only went down once. And then Fournette carried a little bit of the load with 55 yards. What this game is going to be known for, really, is Matt LaFleur's decision at the end of the game, down by eight, to kick a field goal on fourth down, taking the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands instead of going for a touchdown and relying on his defense to try and get a stop. Ultimately, do you think it was more of a Green Bay loss or a Tampa Bay win?
No, I think it was – I really do think it was a Green Bay loss. And, you know, I have a gripe with Aaron Rodgers because at the end of the game, he's complaining to the ref about the pass interference call. It's like, listen, they were letting everybody play the whole game. I don't even know if there was any holding calls, but that was a deliberate pass interference on the last play of the Buccaneers where they were trying to get a first down. I think it was third down. And he held the jersey enough where there was – you could see the jersey being held. They had to call it. And
it was totally scratchy.
And it's just like his – you know, before the season started, it was like, go get Aaron help. How come you didn't get Aaron help? You guys drafted a quarterback. Why didn't you go trade for a wide receiver? It's just like, guys, this guy had 346 yards and three touchdowns. What help does he need? He was one play, literally one play away from winning the game. It's third and goal. He scrambles a little bit. It's open field to the right-hand side. Even if he runs and he doesn't score a touchdown, he probably gets knocked down on the one or the two, or he's able to actually throw it to somebody who scrambles open. I put this loss on Aaron Rodgers, and he's a great player. But on Sunday, he didn't play great when it counted.
I agree. I noticed a little bit that he had a little bit of target fixation. Like, he was trying to force the ball to Davante Adams a lot in the game. And ultimately, I think that cost him because if you're watching the game, you're watching the analysis in real time, they're pointing out how wide open some of the other receiving options are. And he's just trying to force it into a hole that isn't there. So, yeah, I get you're trying to get your guys some touches. But at the end of the day, like, what got you there is spreading the ball around. Another guy who deserves a little bit of blame is Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones, I mean, he left with a chest injury, but he put the ball on the ground twice. Granted, the Packers recovered one, but the Bucs recovered the other one, and it led directly to a score. Matt LaFleur definitely, he needs to get some goat horns for that call. You know, you're down by eight.
Yeah,
I get what you're trying to do,
right.
Your defense is not as good as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense. So you know what? I get the pass I call ultimately costing the game, but don't put yourself in that position to begin with. The refs kind of missed a couple of calls. I know Sean Murphy bunting definitely had a couple of suspect plays where it could have been pass I. Those got let go, you know.
I don't think his holds really prevented the receiver from catching the ball. Like, yes, I believe he held players. He held Lazard. He held other guys. But those holds didn't prevent the receiver from catching the ball. The hold in the last 2 minutes of the game prevented Jefferson from getting to the ball. I mean, there was no way you couldn't call that. It was so clear and oblivious that they couldn't not call it. And
that was blatant.
And the other thing is LaFleur was outcoached to a certain degree, right? You have the fourth and goal. You decide to kick the field goal. I'm going to give them the ball back. I'm going to stop 43-year-old Tom Brady, get the ball back, and go down and win. Okay. Now, at the end of the first half, Brady and Arians and team are faced with a similar situation. It's fourth and one. What are we going to do? Oh, we're going to punt. No, we're going to go for it. That winds up turning into like a 40-yard touchdown pass. You gave them opportunities, and Tom was trying to give them back the game. He threw three interceptions. He was not sharp. He did not play well at all. They won in
No,
spite of him.
they did. Absolutely. But
I just don't want to hear. I don't want to hear anymore. Get Aaron Rodgers help. I'm done with it. He's had good teams. He's had great teams. You let this man, who's 43 years old, first year playing with this team, from Tampa Bay, 73 degree weather, come into your house and beat you. I don't want to hear it. I'm done with it. It's over. You think he's going to come back and have a better year than he did last year? The conversation they have this week is like, it should be Aaron Rodgers saying, you know what? It's best that I leave because it's not working here. We just went to two NFC championship games and we lost. Like, it's how is it going to get better? I'm going to be 38 years old next year. How's it getting better? What are you guys going to do? Who are you going to draft now? They have three stud running backs. Forget about two. They got two. They have really good running backs. Their receivers aren't great, but they're good. They're serviceable. It's like, come on.
We're watching Aaron Rodgers turn to Brett Favre before our very eyes. The same way we watch Brett Favre turn into Brett Favre. He's becoming that player. And then after the game in the press conference, he's throwing his coach under the bus, not agreeing with the play call, and then, just passive aggressively leaving the door open that maybe he won't be there next year. And what are you going to do with Jordan Love? So, you know what? Like, there's speculation that this may be headed to an ugly divorce, but we are going to see what happens there. Aaron Rodgers will be in demand if he demands a trade. Like, the Green Bay Packers are going to have they're going to have their choice at that point. Like, how many number ones are you going to give me for Aaron Rodgers? I mean, granted, just Deshaun Watson's available. We're going to talk about that. Matthew Stafford is going to be available soon. We're going to talk about that. But Aaron Rodgers is totally next tier. So he did behave like a petulant child after the game. And,
Oh, I get it.
at
I get
least
it. He's frustrated. He's upset. He's frustrated. You could see when he shook Brady's hand, like he's just like, man, I gotta go. Like,
Yeah.
I gotta go. I gotta go.
And then, speculating linking him to the 49ers, with the after the whole spiteful pick about, the spiteful interview about the 49ers are going to regret passing on him. That would be a very interesting scenario if he were to end up in San Francisco after all. But speaking of San Francisco, their opponents in the Super Bowl last year, the Kansas City Chiefs, knocked off the Buffalo Bills 38 to 24 in the AFC title game. Patrick Mahomes went 29 for 38 for 325, three touchdowns, no picks. Josh Allen was 28 for 48, 287, two touches and a pick, got sacked four times, looked like a deer in a headlight. It didn't look very good. You can tell he wasn't comfortable. He was also the team's leading rusher with 88 yards. So ultimately, what I saw was a really soft zone played by Leslie Frazier, and Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy were just picking it apart as will at will. Travis Kelce just found a spot, sat down, got his first down. Lather, rinse, repeat. And if you're gonna let Kansas City move the ball down the field that way, you're gonna lose probably 99 times out of 100.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they got spotted 9 points, right? Because of the muffled punt, and
Yes,
then
Mecole Hardman,
they
yeah.
kicked the field goal. So they got spotted 9 points and they still lost. I mean, Allen can't be your leading rusher and your leading passer. They need a running back.
Is that
What
guy
was
Zach
what
Moss, though?
we yeah, what was covered up, I think, is during the regular season, I think the Buffalo Bills defense was bottom five in the league in red zone defense. Now they didn't play that way in their first, two games of the playoffs, but that came into light against the Chiefs, where they just weren't able to stop They weren't able to stop anybody on that team. They just were out. The Chiefs are too fast for them. They couldn't catch them. They tried everything. They were throwing everything at them. But the bottom line is you give Pat Mahomes that much time, people are going to come open. And you can't be playing Tariq Hill one-on-one. If you're going to play zone, you got to get pressure on Mahomes. I mean, I think dating back to college, Mahomes has only lost 5 games by more than one score. You know, something stupid like that. Actually, I don't think he's lost any games by more than one score. Some crazy stat like that. So I think Buffalo's got a lot of work to do, but we will see the Bills and Allen and Mahomes again for years to come.
Josh Allen will be back. He will learn from this, just as the same way he learned from last year's abysmal playoff outing. This kid, he has a high football IQ, and he's definitely on an upward trajectory. He's constantly improving every year. So that is a plus if you are a Buffalo Bills fan. You definitely need to be encouraged by that. But the running game was non-existent. Devin Singletary was second in rushing with 17 yards. 17. 17. Allen had 88. Your quarterback, you cannot afford. I mean, he's not Michael Vick, to the point where, you know, and even then, Michael Vick had like Michael Turner. He had a bunch of guys that would spell him. Josh Allen was doing it all on his own, and you can tell he was feeling the pressure. I mean, he took a lot. He took a lot of yardage on those sacks. For 4 sacks for 53 yards. And that's on him too. You got to get rid of the ball. You can't just try and scramble out and scream blow the whistle at the ref. You gotta learn to throw the ball away. If it's not there, get rid of it. And that's a maturation process that I thought he had gotten through. Apparently he isn't quite there yet. And it's back to the drawing board with him and Brian Daboll and Coach McDermott. And this team is going to get better. For Kansas City, it's on to Tampa to take on Tampa. The first time ever that a home team will host a Super Bowl, which is we're in for a real treat. So we're going to get into that game more next week since we have the extra week. Some speculation going on, a lot of NFL news regarding quarterbacks. Matthew Stafford of the Detroit Lions, at least for now, went to ownership and the new GM of the team and said, "It would be better if we just part ways. It's not you, it's me. Maybe it's a little bit of you, but it would be better off if we just parted our ways and you traded me." What team in this league, and there's about 15 or 16 teams that could probably use a quarterback the caliber of Matthew Stafford. Who is the best fit, in your opinion, to trade for Matthew Stafford, and who's actually gonna pony up the first round pick that Detroit wants?
You know, I heard a lot of people say the Broncos, because they
No,
have a
not the
lot of good
Broncos again.
receivers and the Denver defense over there. And you know, John Elway would love to have a strong arm Matthew Stafford, but you know, I said it last week. I really like the idea of the Saints or the Colts. I think those are two spots where he can go in and right away, you know, pick up where the previous quarterback left off. One of the things I heard on ESPN this week was, you know, Dan Orlovsky was sounding off on the Lions saying they ruined Matthew Stafford and his Hall of Fame talent. And I don't believe that at all. I think while he was there, he enjoyed Calvin Johnson, which was one of the most prolific receivers in NFL history. And he was up against better teams. I mean, he had to play against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. He had to play against a stout Bears defense for many years, and then the Vikings were coming calling for some time. So it just was unlucky for him. I think he's going to have a good chance to maybe have a Carson Palmer or Kurt Warner like second run with a team. So I'm excited to see where he lands, but that's where I'd like to see him go.
Well, first off, on Dan Orlovsky, you and I always have the same conversation whenever we talk about Dan Orlovsky. This coward ran out of the back of the end zone because he didn't want to get hit. So, Mr. Orlovsky, that is your NFL career highlight. So, please, refrain from speaking about people who are actually good. Please, will you do that for me? As for Matthew Stafford, he's 32 going on 62. I mean, he's gotten beat up the past few years. He was an Iron Man at one point, but now, like, he is missing a ton of time. So I don't know what team is actually going to pony up a first-round pick for a guy who is getting beaten up a lot. So, I mean, granted, you take out the Bears. The Bears could definitely use a quarterback, but there's no way the Lions are trading him within the division. That just sounds like a recipe for disaster. We're going to talk about Deshaun Watson in a second. One of two teams, either the Dolphins or the Jets, could possibly use him. Whoever loses out on Deshaun Watson could definitely pick up a Matthew Stafford. I really like him in Washington with the football team. I think him to Terry McLaurin with a competent run game. And as long as they re-sign Brandon Scherff, who is a really good offensive lineman, if they can keep him upright and keep him healthy, I can see him doing big things with a football team. The Saints would be a great idea. Yeah, I mean, you can put Matthew Stafford on six or seven teams and elevates them to the playoffs. The whole thing is keeping him upright and keeping him healthy. The first round pick would scare me off. We've been talking about it in our production meetings. We've been bantering it back and forth. Would the New England Patriots pay such a rich fee for him? And I don't know if Bill Belichick necessarily would. So that kind of eliminates him in my eyes.
The more I think about it, he's not going to give up a first round. I think the best he would do is a fourth round pick for him, like the Randy Moss deal, like something along those lines. But, you know, from what we're hearing from La Conforta and most of the people on NFL.com is that a lot of teams are calling to see what exactly they want, because it's a mutual parting of ways. So Stafford doesn't want to be there. The Lions are okay with him leaving. So he's going to leave. He's going to get traded. He's not going to go into camp as a Lions player. So that makes it a little harder, I think, to trade him, right? Because now if I'm a team that's interested, I'm like, well, he's not going to be there anyway. So I'll give you a second. I'll give you a third. I'll give you a fourth. I'll give you a fourth and a player. But I think a lot of teams are going to come to the table. The only thing I would say is I think he should go to a place that's a quarterback away, right? Like the Jets doesn't seem like a really good idea. The Dolphins is okay, but the Dolphins seems like they should go with somebody younger. Like they should get somebody like Deshaun Watson or stick with Tua, because you got a team that you're growing, you're building. The 49ers, maybe that might be a good idea too, but he should definitely go to a place that's a quarterback away, not a place where they're building or they think they have something. There's been a lot of discourse lately with Les Snead and the Rams and Jared Goff. I don't see Jared Goff going anywhere, but, you know, that would be another interesting idea if he was able to latch on with the Rams.
I also don't know if he'll fit too well in Sean McVay's system, but one team that's...
Who does?
Well, yeah.
I don't even know what that system is about anymore. They ran the ball way better than they threw it this year. And when you talk about the Rams, you talk about their defense. You're not talking about their offense at all.
That's true, but that's the funny part. When they first – it was all about speed. It was basically like more effective Chip Kelly offense. But now like they've lost their entire identity. Once Todd Gurley left, once his knee started flaring up, like it all went to pot. But one team that's really interesting to me, and we have to wait and we have to sit – and watch, is the Steelers. Granted, they just brought in Dwayne Haskins, but Dwayne Haskins is on, you know, he's on like double secret probation. Like, he fucks up there, he's done. Joshua Dobbs, really? Mason Rudolph, really? Ben Roethlisberger, we don't know. Would the Steelers, in order to keep this thing going, to keep the train on the tracks, would they trade for Matthew Stafford? I would think they would, and I think that would be a good fit too.
Especially if Ben retires.
Right. So that's the thing. We're waiting on him. We already know Phillip Rivers is gone. Maybe the Colts. Not a bad little place landing spot either. But we do know that one quarterback has already kind of put his preferred landing spot out. And that's Deshaun Watson of the Houston Texans, who, according to reports, prefers to go to the New York Jets, especially now that they have hired head coach Robert Saleh. My question is this. Deshaun Watson, do you really want to win?
Ladies and gentlemen, do not drink the water in Houston. There's something wrong with the water in Houston.
What do you see on the Jets that makes you think, hey, this is a place I want to be?
They're going places. I like the way they think there.
I don't understand it, but I mean, like,
brilliant.
I mean, do you have any insight on this? Because I have no fucking earthly idea.
Man, I really want to throw to Breshad Perryman. he's awesome.
Braxton Berrios. Oh yeah, that's some good stuff right there.
They've done so good with quarterbacks in the past. I could be Mark Sanchez in a couple of years.
Oh man!
If I'm lucky.
Oh, if he's lucky, you know. Yeah. Oh my goodness, Deshaun Watson. What are you thinking, man? If that's the case, stay with the Texans. You know.
You know, and that's the one place that you know they haven't hired a coach yet. I mean, at this point, it's got to be the enemy, right? I mean, you're not holding out for anybody else that's playing in this Super Bowl. Unless maybe it's Byron Leftwich, that would be interesting. But it's got to be the enemy at this point, right? I mean, Frazier, I don't think it's going to be Frazier. They would have hired him already. Joe Brady, I don't think that's happening. Schottenheimer, oh, I don't even think that guy got an interview. So I just, you know, I don't know. But that report, I mean, we've heard it from certain sources, mostly New York sources. I don't know how true that is. But, man, if that's the case, when he gets to New York, get him a CT scan right away.
Oh, my goodness. Just like, what do you see here? It's like a Rorschach test. Like, you're going to put Braxton Berrios. I see Will Fuller. What do you see? Breshad Perriman. I see DeAndre Hopkins. Dude, your eyes are crossed. I don't know what to tell you.
I see the New York Jets. I see multiple championships over long periods.
Not four, not five, not six. I think he's talking about
Scott. I'm going to be the king of New York. I'm going to be the king of New York. Deshaun, they play in New Jersey. I'm going to be the king of New Jersey.
Oh, my God. All I know is that the relationship is so beyond repair that he's willing to go to the Jets. I mean, Cesario, he was not consulted on that hire. Yeah, I get it. You want to be involved in the organization. But at the end of the day, like, McNair went behind your back, allegedly. I'd say he was just doing his job as the owner. But
another part of me believes that this is orchestrated, right? Like, this was the mindset when they went and got this GM, mm-hmm. was that we're going to create this rift because we need to get him off our books. We cannot rebuild this team with no draft picks and all of our money going to this quarterback.
Oh, totally.
And every single year there are stud quarterbacks coming out of college. So, you know, Tua was, I wouldn't call Tua a stud, but come on, for half the price you can have Tua. I mean, come on. Jimmy G, like these guys are the college game has changed so much that, granted, Deshaun Watson is a fantastic quarterback. This is not a shot at him at all. But the situation that Houston has themselves into, they're not going to be able to win with him in the short term. So you're going to have this guy, and then what happens if you don't want to play the what-if game, but if he gets hurt or you just waste, like even J.J. Watt says, we're just wasting years for you. We're wasting it on you. That stuff, it's true.
No, it totally true. Is. At the same time, though, like they can turn around. I could definitely see a guy like Mac Jones, you know? Why not? He runs a style offense in Alabama. He knows what he's doing. And if you could take him in like the third or fourth round, like the guy's, you know, he seems to have a good head on his shoulder. He's like AJ McCarron with an arm. And everybody talked about how much,
listen, you're in the...
you know, how high the acumen was for AJ McCarron. If you've ever listened to a podcast and thought to yourself, hey, I can do this, then do I have the tools for you? If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. No specialty training, no specialty programs needed. Anchor will then distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. How cool is that? It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Go to anchor.fm and get started today. That's anchor.fm. What are you waiting for? Download the app. But it makes you wonder, definitely, about the coaching vacancy, though. Like, to go back to what you were saying, like, they have to be waiting on somebody from one of these staffs.
It has to be.
Like,
it has
I
to
mean,
be.
It's got to be Bieniemy.
It has
it's
to be.
It's either Bieniemy or Leftwich, or I don't think Todd Bowles gets another shot so quickly.
No, that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense. And why, you know, and why not get a college guy? Like, it just – I don't know. It seems like it's all lining up for Bieniemy. If it's not Bieniemy, I'd be shocked. And for him, that would kind of be a good situation for him, you know, because he can go in there. He'll get to handpick his quarterback, yeah. And he'll be able to get a bunch of draft picks. But, you know, it's a terrible situation there. And the other thing is when you think about it, they're in the AFC South. I mean, there's no world beaters in the AFC South. Like, the Colts were the best team in that division this year. Like, Jacksonville is rebuilding. You're the Houston Texans. Tennessee Titans, they're really good, but they're beatable. I mean, they're beatable. Is King Henry going to go for another 2,000 yards next year? I don't think so. So you could quickly turn things around, but the more I listen to this, the more I'm thinking this was orchestrated by the organization. They felt like, okay, let's get his input, but ultimately we're going to do what we want. Not that that's going to piss him off, but this is laying the groundwork for, okay, he's upset. All right, this works out to our advantage. So, you know, let's see if we can use this in our favor. Like, it's a PR thing. That's my opinion, because you wouldn't deliberately do this to him.
No, definitely.
Right? You wouldn't deliberately do this to your best player.
Well, I mean, it runs parallel to a very similar situation in Philly too, the way Doug Peterson handled Carson Wentz. Ultimately, that one blew up in his face and cost him his job, to the point where Nick Sirianni, the offensive coordinator, I think we grew up with him. I think we went to high school with him.
Jamestown, New York, right?
Yeah. He, the last of the offensive coordinator position of the Indianapolis Colts, is now the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. We know that he is under Frank Reich, who is under Doug Peterson, who is under Andy Reid. So, really, isn't this just maintaining the status quo over there in Philly?
I don't think so. The more I looked into the situation, it's very peculiar. And I say it in this sense. Like, they brought this guy in, and they allowed him to hire his own staff. He picked the guys that he wanted to be on his coaching staff. Now, when you compare this to Doug Peterson kept most of the coaches that were there from Chip Kelly. And they're really good coaches. Like, they really helped the Eagles win that Super Bowl. Apparently, Doug Peterson just doesn't have a good acumen for, you know, picking up coaches, and doesn't have a lot of connections in the league. I just think it's very interesting that they bring this guy in and they're like, yeah, you can, you know, kind of pick your set. I don't even think this guy's ever called a play, because he came from Minneapolis under Frank Reich, but pretty sure Reich was calling the plays there. And then before that, he was in San Diego or LA. No, he was in San Diego at the time, or LA. And Reich was calling the plays there too. So I don't even know if this guy's ever called a play. And they bring him in, and just like, well, what's his offense going to look like? And is Carson Wentz your guy? Are you in the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes too? Like, how's this going
to
play out?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. Because if you look at the Indianapolis Colts offense, I mean, it definitely left something to be desired. You know, you have a decent run game there. I mean, you didn't get your best wide receiver involved. T.Y. Hilton was a ghost for most of the year. I mean, granted, they finally figured out how to use him a little bit towards the end of the year, but, you know, kind of too little too late. You had three quality tight ends. Well, at least they came to be three quality tight ends. Nobody heard of Mo Alie-Cox before the season started. So, you know, there was, you know, they moved the ball. They scored points. They definitely were a force to be reckoned with. If you take that same system over to Philly, what are we working with here? Your running game is Miles Sanders and Boston Scott. Is that as good? Who are good? Are they as good as the Indianapolis running game? I'm not so sure. Wideouts, I mean, there is no T.Y. Hilton on the Eagles whatsoever. I mean, Travis Fulgham, okay, like he was okay this year. Like he came out of nowhere. Greg Ward, I think, was your second best wide receiver. You know, they have a lot of room to grow in the wide receiver position. Tight end, Zach Ertz and Dallas.
Which makes you think they're gonna probably take a wide receiver in the draft, right? They're probably gonna get the guy. They're not gonna be at Devonta Smith, but they might be able to get the second wide receiver from Alabama.
They might take Waddle. They definitely might take him. You know, we got to see because he might not even make it. I mean, it all depends on, you know, any trades that happen. Because Miami may be taking a wide out if they stay at number three, or if they give that up for Watson. Does Houston jump in? You know, teams are there's a possibility that moves will be made, but you know, there's a possibility that Smith may fall because he's not small, but he's definitely undersized at 6'1" and 175. He can grow into his body, but you know, he's still young. And at that size, he might get beaten up a little bit. Tight end position in Philly, Zach Ertz, goodbye. So that leaves you Dallas Goedert. I mean, Dallas Goedert's good, but is he as good as the three-headed monster of Doyle, Cox, and Burton? Like, I don't think so. And offensive line. Is the offensive line as good as the Indianapolis Colts? So this system, you know, he may have to rethink the system on the fly because the talent may not be there yet. We got to look at the cap situation and see if they can add some free agents for them. And if Wentz isn't the guy and Hurts is the guy, does that change everything entirely? So I don't know. I feel like Sirianni kind of stepped in it a little bit. And, you know, the only real solid unit for me is the defense in Philly. But I mean, we're going to have to see.
I'm not trying to say like Doug Peterson was the best coach in that division, but now the best coach in that division is clearly Ron.
Oh, no. Oh, totally. Like, above. Absolutely.
Head and shoulders above all the guys that he's going to be coaching against.
Yeah. I mean, if we're doing an impromptu order up and we're doing an impromptu order up right now, Rivera, order up.
Order up.
I'm going Rivera, Judge, McCarthy, and then this guy just because he's a giant question mark.
Yeah, I go along with that too. I think McCarthy's system only works with certain players.
Yeah, like Mr. Aaron Rodgers. To bring it back full circle.
Just to even bring up another point on Aaron Rodgers. You know, I was talking to a buddy of mine from the Midwest, Mike, and he was telling me that, you know, Brett Favre is probably still the more loved Packer quarterback, because if Rodgers was able to deliver this second championship, it might have changed things. But the fact that he wasn't able to deliver the second championship, it could really hurt his legacy.
Yeah, I could see where that would occur. I mean, Brett Favre always, like, he's that lovable good old boy, you know? He's just like, he puts on his Wranglers and he goes out and plays and gives it his all and all shucks. Whereas Aaron Rodgers really is like, I know he just comes off as super standoffish, and not that he thinks he's better than you, but he kind of thinks he's better than you, and you know it. So yeah, I mean, I can definitely see where Brett Favre would capture the Midwestern sensibility more so than an Aaron Rodgers would. But yeah, it's all for naught anyway, because I don't know if Aaron Rodgers is staying. Like, he might be the third domino to fall. He might be the first domino to fall, but there are a lot of moving parts that we can look forward to once the Super Bowl has come and gone, and the new league year is upon us. We're going to have a lot of fun. And there's going to be a wild ride along the way. It's time for the mail route on the fade route. If you want to join us, email faderoutemail@gmail.com. Questions, comments, picks, you name it, faderoutemail@gmail.com. All right, boys and girls, we have a full mailbox for you guys today. Starting first with Caesar in Hell's Kitchen, a friend of the show and frequent emailer. Hey guys, what's going on? The Capitals, Wizards, and Grizzlies have all had COVID scares. How can leagues alter their roster rules to keep the seasons on track? It's a great question. It's really one that we've been thinking about. And for me, I keep going back to Major League Baseball. They put a taxi squad on their roster. It's basically the equivalent of the healthy scratch in hockey. You can definitely implement that and kind of extend the rosters to a certain degree. I mean, you can add three more guys from the AHL affiliate in the NHL. You can keep a couple of G League guys, just a couple extra G League guys in case you need to, in case you need to flush out the rosters. Major League Baseball, they had their alternate sites, so maybe you should have some alternate sites where guys are practicing along with maybe an assistant coach or somebody who has the system down so that it can just be a plug-and-play scenario, so you're not doing what the Wizards did where they had to sign Alex Len like on a Friday and you're in the lineup on Saturday. Like, I don't even know what the hell we're running here. So, like, what kind of system are we running here? I don't know. I'm not even sure where I am right now. So, you definitely can do something like that and maybe relax it to some point where you can have like an emergency player. Remember when the Broncos wanted to start their quarterback control coach and the NFL wouldn't let them do it. If he's an able-bodied enough guy, maybe you put that out there. Like,
if he's sober and he's American, get him in there.
Even in hockey, they have the emergency goaltender, right? Like, just in case something happens, basically they pluck a guy from the fucking stands. Like, dude, you can be the goalie tonight. So, like, I don't know. Like, maybe these are ways the leagues can go so that they're not canceling games for 6-7 days at a time. I don't know. You tell me. You got any ideas on this, brother?
I just think they should try to follow the NFL model because the NFL, regardless of how many outbreaks they had, they didn't miss games. They played their games. So if that means – if for the NBA, if that means letting the G League players come up and play, let the G League players come up and game. There's 54 games in this season, I believe. If the G League players come up and have to play 3 or 4 games, let it be. You're getting into a situation where I don't see how some of these teams are going to make up these games. You got teams like you said, like the Grizzlies and the Wizards. They missed like 6 games. Like, how are they supposed to make this up? Like, because they're actually traveling. So when are they going to play some of these teams? How are they going to get in the same area code and play them again? It just seems like I'm not trying to disrespect the season or say it's not important. But at one point in the NFL season, like you said, the Broncos had a practice squad quarterback because, hey, we got to get these games in. We got to play. Like, just for this year, we're just going to have to work with this. And I think basketball is a lot less dangerous, right?
Oh, totally.
Because in football, if you don't know what you're doing, you can get killed. Like, in basketball, I mean, it's pick and roll. It's screen and roll. It's motion. It's man-to-man. Like, you can go up and down the court a couple of times and figure it out. And at the end of the day, are we really worried about the Wizards and the Grizzlies, like, losing games? So let's just get as many games as we can in. If that means letting the G League players play, let the G League players
play. Yeah, I think that'll be fine. And, I mean, it goes to show you, though, that no system is perfect because the NHL gerrymandered their division so that they would minimize travel. So as opposed to the NBA where it's like, ah, dude, we're just going to play a shorter season, but guess what? it's going to be like COVID never happened. You guys are going to be on planes. You're going to be in this city and that city. You're going to be all over the country, baby. So it goes to show you.
And the other part about the other part is it's not like they're playing in front of fans right now. So it's not like people are paying $180, $250 to see G Leaguers. Like nobody's paying any money to see these games. So let's just get the games in. Like you might even discover something at
that's
some
true.
Point.
Exactly. So the next great superstar, the next unknown might be a G League player who just explodes on the scene. So, you know, just let it ride and let's see where it goes. Our next email comes from Lowe in Columbus, Ohio. New to the show. Guys, there's 3 weeks until pitchers and catchers report. When and where will Trevor Bauer sign?
He's got to go to the Mets, right? I mean, you got to imagine they're working out this deal. From what I understand, he's trying to get Cole money, which is fine, $27, $28 million. But there's a lot of guys still out there. I mean, it's unreal. You got like Yadier Molina, Matt Wieters, Daniel Murphy, who should probably go back to the Mets too. Absurdo Cabrera, good shortstop. Joe Panic, St. John's alum. Woohoo! Jonathan Shoup. Justin Turner's still out there with a 4.7 WAR.
Are you listing Mets or are you listing free agents?
I'm listing free agents.
The last five guys you listed, I think, were all former Mets. It's very interesting.
Jake Lamb, good player. D.D. Gregorius, Brett Gardner, I don't like him, but he's available. Jock Peterson, he's got to become an Angel, right? Jay Bruce, Jackie Bradley Jr., another good Met. He should go to the Mets. Billy Hamilton, great base runner. Deer Park's own Nick Markakis. I hope the Braves take him back. Yasiel Puig, what's going on there? Marcelo Ozuna, a 5 WAR. He's still out there. Nelson Cruz, a 6 WAR. Still out there. Ordorezzi, still out there. Tanaka, Wainwright, Roberto Ozuna. There's a lot of guys that are still out there, and you know they haven't gotten to sign anybody yet. And you would think they would sign them because you know you're going to have COVID issues. And you're going to need a deeper roster.
Well, it's definitely been a slow-moving market. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that teams didn't know if there was going to be a universal DH. So that definitely changes how you construct your roster. So now that, you know, we're going to get to that in our next email. But now that we found out that there won't be a universal DH, maybe some of these guys will start coming off the board. And that's going to limit, like, Nelly Cruz. That's definitely going to limit his market because you're not sticking Nelson Cruz out in the field now. He's, like, 44 years old. If you do, good luck. But, you know, with Bauer, this is spite. He hates Gerrit Cole, and he wants – if it's a dollar more, he wants to make a dollar more.
That's what he wants.
I just want to make a dollar more than Gerrit Cole. And you know what? Come to New York. We have –
He's good. Could you imagine if they got him, if you're playing a three-game series against the Mets, you got to go against DeGrom, Bauer, Syndergaard. Come on.
You can throw Stroman in there. You can go cook Carrasco instead if Syndergaard's not healthy.
Jeez.
That's pretty deep.
I'm just saying, geez, that's like, oh, great. I can't wait to play the Mets.
Exactly. And you know what? They just signed Aaron Loop today, too. So the lefty out of the bullpen has definitely been solved. You know, Brad Hand went to the Washington Nationals. So Sandy Alderson and the new GM, I forget his name. He was the assistant, got promoted when Mr. Dick Pick got fired, and rightfully so.
Nationals making some good moves.
Definitely.
I like how they went and picked up what's his name from Lester. I love that pickup.
It's a solid move, you know, going in behind Strasburg and Scherzer. I mean, you're definitely going to shore up your rotation, so you don't have to go back into like the Anibal Sanchez market. No offense, he was a great National, won them a ring, but you know, John Lester, you know, I definitely would prefer having him on that roster. And JT Realmuto just moved. He's back in Philly on a 5-year deal. $15 million.
Jeez.
Marcus Semien.
Yeah. For a catcher.
It's very interesting. And then after that, they signed all former Yankees to minor league contracts. So, like, Ivan Nova, Brian Mitchell, Like, basically, if you were a former Yankee from 2009 to 2015, you might have a minor league deal. Hey, Brett, you might have a minor league deal available in Philly. Just don't go back to the Yankees.
He's awful.
God, he sucks. I can't stand him. Our third and final email comes from Jim in Louisville, Kentucky. What are your thoughts on the Major League Baseball Players Association rejecting the universal DH and expanded playoffs? Well, Jim,
I mean, it's a money thing, right? I mean, that's basically what it's about. That's what I think it's about. But I am a National League guy. I believe the pitcher should have to bat. I don't like the DH. But the scenario where I would accept a universal DH is that everybody gets a universal DH, but the minute you take out your starting pitcher, you have to eliminate the pitcher has to bat. I think that's fair.
I heard that rule. I think that was that suggestion. I think was what Joel Sherman. I think was
yeah.
That's a great idea. It's
I'm fine with it.
It's like an inverted DH rule. Like if you lose your DH to whatever reason, your pitcher has to hit. So if he has to play the field, yeah.
You save your starting pitcher,
yeah.
Right? Because now he won't get hurt because everyone's always worried about their starting pitcher batting, pulling a hamstring, or getting hurt. And now it's in your hands. You could let your relievers bat, or you could simply pitch it for them whenever they get up. More people will get to play. And, I think I'd be okay with that kind of format.
As a traditionalist, I didn't like the universal DH rule. I like my National League baseball. I like the strategy of it. I like the double switching. It was a weird year with the universal DH, and I get the necessity of it. I don't like the fact that one is tied to the other. Like the owners tried to sneak that by the Players Association. Like, you want this, but you got to take this. And, I get that Major League Baseball Players Association just wants as much money as they can get for their constituents. And that's, that's their right as organized labor. Like, that's what you should be doing. And there has to be a better way of coming to the table and trying to mutually benefit each other. Because this is an acrimonious relationship, to say the least. And I don't want this to end in another labor stoppage. And Tony Clark and Rob Manfred seem to be on a collision course to another labor stoppage. But I'm not a fan of the expanded playoffs either, to be honest with you. One wild card was enough. And now you have a second one. And now you have another one. I mean, when does it stop? Like, there's only so many teams in the league. You're going to have to, call a number at some point. When is enough enough?
I've been saying it for years. Baseball is a shark. It is perfect the way it is. It had no reason to evolve since the moment it was created.
Just exactly. Alone. Keep your damn hands off my baseball. If you want to get featured, email us at faderoutemail@gmail.com or hit us up on Instagram. Slide in our DMs at faderoutepodcast. You hit us up, you might end up on the show.
Swipe left or swipe right?
You know the drill, boys and girls. If we agree with the statement, we're swiping right. If we disagree, we're swiping left. Today's topic is going to be a deeper dive on some of the Hall of Fame candidates that are not getting the coverage they deserve. So, the first candidate, are we swiping left or swiping right on Scott Rolen? What's your call, D?
Man, it's tough. I mean, you remember growing up, I love Scott Rolen. He was one of my favorite players. I don't think he's got the numbers. I mean, he's, I think, a 281 lifetime hitter. He's got 8 Gold Glove awards. Mm-hmm. That's nice. But he's the only Hall of Famer he has similar numbers to is Ron Santo. And I'm going to have to swipe left for him.
I'm going to swipe right on him. Got a ring, not the championships are the end all be all. 7-time All-Star, 8-time Gold Glover, former Rookie of the Year, has a Silver Slugger to his name. Definitely lived up to the hype as far as, you know, maybe unreasonable expectations when he got to Philly. He was supposed to be the next Mike Schmidt. He definitely was the first Scott Rolen. So defensive whiz, he's a great defensive player. And, you know, 281 is nothing to sneeze at. 316 home runs, decent numbers. You know, his on-base percentage, career 364. Slugging was OPS 855. That's not bad. So, I mean, if Ron Santo's in and it's a comp, I say go with it.
Okay, up next we got Omar Vizquel. You swiping left?
I'm swiping right on Omar Vizquel for two reasons. Ozzie Smith and Bill Mazeroski. Defensive whizzes that are in the Hall of Fame already. And you know what? If you do a deeper dive on Omar Vizquel's numbers, offensively, he was better than Ozzie Smith. You're looking at a career 272 batting average, 10 points higher than Ozzie Smith. Ozzie Smith didn't even hit 20 home runs in his career. So Omar Vizquel had 80 for his career. So granted, it's, you know, not that great, but still, Ozzie Smith is in. I'm going to have to go with an 11-time Gold Glove winner in Omar Vizquel. What say you?
Yeah, I'm swiping right on him too, especially if he could do a backflip. 11-time Gold Glover, and again, comps to Ozzie Smith, so I think he gets in. Next we got is Todd Helton. Swiping left or swiping right?
This one is probably the most difficult one that's on our list today. And just based on the numbers we have here, I'm going to swipe right. A 316 career hitter, 369 home runs. He's got a batting title. It's a 5-time All-Star, 4-time Silver Slugger. Defensively, he was a 3-time Gold Glove winner. He wasn't great, but he was very good at first base. He wasn't flashy, but he got the job done. Considering he had a bad back from pretty much when he was playing football at Tennessee, and he was the quarterback before Peyton Manning. So,
That's right.
A little trivia awesome for you there, kids. But what gives you pause about him is the Coors Field factor. If you compare him to Larry Walker, Larry Walker went to St. Louis and he came from Montreal. So he had a career outside of Colorado. Todd Helton, he only played for the Rockies. So I think he's a Hall of Famer, but I can see where people would balk at that.
Yeah, I'm swiping right. His comps are Bagwell, Vlad G, Larry Walker. All those guys are in, so he gets in for me. Last one we have is Mark Burley. Swiping left or you swiping right?
I am swiping right on Mark Burley as well. Not only is he a 5-time All-Star, not only does he have 214 wins to his resume, career 3.8 ERA, that's decent, not great. He's got a ring. Defensively, he won 4 Gold Gloves, so he was a rock-solid player. What takes me over the top for him? The no-hitter and the perfect game. Like, that really is what seals the deal for me for Mark Burley.
Well, you kind of talked me into it. I actually originally swiped left for him, but I didn't realize he had a no-hitter and a perfect game. I'm not impressed with his 214 wins. I think that's mediocre because he had 160 losses. That's a lot.
Hey, if you played for the White Sox, you would have a lot of losses too.
3.8 ERA is pretty good, though. But if he's got the perfect game, the World Series ring, and a no-hitter, yeah, I think he gets in. I agree with that.
Anybody else do you think, we missed or you want us to take a deeper dive on? Remember, hit the email. Who knows? We may do that deep dive for you.
Thanks for tuning in tonight. You can catch our podcast on Spotify or the Anchor.
If you want to get in on the action, we want to hear from you. Email us at faderoutemail@gmail.com with your questions, comments, picks, segment suggestions, you name it. We want to hear from you. We're on Instagram too. Slide in our DMs @FadeRoutePodcast. Get at us.